the AgBull podcast. Today, I'm sitting with Scott Sanders from Peterson Farms Seed. This podcast was recorded in Mayville, North Dakota. It'll be available on both video and audio. Scott, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Tommy. I appreciate it.
So first podcast I hear.
It is the first podcast. And
you didn't even balk at it. I said, you want to do a podcast? You go, yeah. I'm like, huh. Even have to ask twice.
Well, it depends on the questions, but yeah, I think this will be pretty good.
Well, it's all about you. Let's get into the show.
Okay.
Tell us about yourself.
The general manager, Peterson Farm Seed. I've been there for a little over 6 years now. Grew up in the western side of North Dakota, Bismarck and Minot. My extended family's all from Dickinson, and I finished up my last 2 years in high school in Fargo, so kind of all over. My dad was in the radio and TV business, so I took off to college, spent a lot of my time in Minneapolis, and really wanted to get back to Fargo. I saw that as kind of a goal to get to North Dakota. And I thought if I'm going to be in Fargo or North Dakota, it might be a good idea to get into agriculture. It's sort of a big business up here. So yeah, that's how I got back to Fargo, was talked to Carl Peterson, met him a little bit. I was with a canola company prior to Peterson for a short while, a year. And then we ended up selling that business. And Carl and I met through a couple networking events, and 6 years later, I'm working for Carl Peterson at Peterson Farm Seed.
I believe when I first met you, it was Peterson, the field day.
That's
and
right.
You were just had started, and I had walked up, and it was a beautiful fall day. You had a good turnout for that. You had a good turnout for this one this year, right? Great speakers, great education.
Yeah, you know, it's one of the things we really love to do. I mean, we're a seed company, yes, but we really consider ourselves more agronomists. So our field day is our chance to showcase that. And I think when we met, Mike Larson was probably the one to introduce us, and I'm probably 746,000 people that can claim Mike Larson as a friend and someone who got introduced through that guy. So yeah, that was my first field day, and we just had our last one about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. Good turnout, and we're looking to continue to showcase that every year.
Well, I've had a couple barley beverages with that name you've mentioned, and you guys are big supporters of NDSU. I hear you. I hear a lot of ads.
Yeah, I think you know, it's kind of funny as you think about the Bison program, starting in the early 2000s when we switched over to Division I. That's really when Peterson started to take off. So we've had similar trajectories. We advertised quite a bit with the Bison in the early and late 2000s, and getting into 2010, 2015, and you know, as we've grown as a company, we've looked to broaden that a little bit, and we sell seed from the Canadian border down south through into South Dakota and into southern Minnesota. So I've really pushed to get us to, yes, we are big Bison supporters, huge Bison supporters, but we want to make sure we keep the folks in South Dakota and Minnesota in mind as well.
So when we beat the rabbits, just don't do it too bad.
Yeah, in fact.
You sell a little seed in Montana also, right?
You know,
do you go that far?
We don't really. We've got a new program, Yellow Peas, that we might get into some farms on that side, but really that's not our focus. We try to remain central in North Dakota, South Dakota, and Minnesota.
And couldn't quite get that logo on the basketball court, I noticed. I noticed someone else beat you there.
Yeah, there's somebody
we won't
mention those guys.
Names.
Little deeper pockets, you know, they got big stars.
You have a big heart. Very good.
Yeah, there you go.
You already stole one of my questions. Where are you selling seed at? But that's okay. Let's talk
that's
about
okay.
those areas. We are in the Red River Valley.
That's right.
And there are people watching this YouTube, big fans of the show. They didn't know it, but they are now. And the Red River Valley is unique. I had the chance to watch Doug Goring, our ag secretary, speak here at Mayville State the other day. And I want to say he said, I'm probably going to misquote him, but I remember this one. There's like 14 different different weather areas in North Dakota.
Oh, yeah.
So western North Dakota, where you grew up, mm-hmm. is nothing like Fargo.
No. In fact, when I grew up, and that would have been in the 80s and early 90s, I didn't see a lot of corn. And I maybe not was looking for it when I was 8, 9, 10 years old, but I never remember seeing corn. I didn't even know what soybean was back then. And now if you go out there, you can find corn from every corner in our state. So that's one thing we've really been proud of, is trying to find hybrids that really work well in all four corners. And as you get into South Dakota, that's a little different. But North Dakota is an incredibly diverse agricultural state. The I states, right? It's just corn and soybeans, right?
And then sometimes they do beans and corn, Scott. They mix it up.
You know, it depends on the year. Their acre shifts are pretty different than ours.
Every once in a while you see a little wheat, but that's more because someone has animals or horses something. Doug also mentioned that we grow 60 different products here.
Yes.
So we're in North Dakota. Corn, soybeans, wheat. We have the Minneapolis Grain Exchange. When I think of North Dakota, I think of North Dakota mill, wheat. But then we get into the other things. We get into sunflowers, a lot of those this year. Barley, which the malting companies needed, Budweiser and the other ones. And taking a commercial break there. I think is one of our fans. It was actually one of your seed dealers calling on my cell phone.
I think I might have an idea who that is.
Longtime listener, first-time caller. He might just come into the studio, so...
All right.
We'll see how good we are at editing when he pops down like Rodney Dangerfield. Corn, wheat, soybeans, sunflowers.
Yeah, canola.
Barley, canola. Big deal with that crushing plant. Do you sell any canola seed?
No, we don't. We do not. We stick really with corn, soybean. We have our first proprietary variety of wheat, affectionately named by Carl as Buns. So we've had some fun with that. And we are getting a little bit into the yellow peas. There's a lot of interest in peas across the country right now, just because of the plant-based proteins that are out there, whether it be animal food, or, you know, you hear about the, brands out there that are serving up, plant-based, burgers.
Which brings me to a point. Everyone's so busy trying to produce corn and beans because the price is so high that I think we're going to have this, we're going to have some great years up here. I have the Ag Bowl podcast, but I am so bullish North Dakota, I can't see straight. And this is why. We have Ukraine looks like it's out of the game for a while, at least this next year, maybe the one after that.
Yep.
And everyone's trying to grow corn and beans, and they've built the infrastructure for corn, bins, dryers, all that other stuff.
Right.
That we're forgetting to plant the other products. So North Dakota was, let's plant something and see what I could lose the least on, store and ignore, and try to make a buck, and maybe some government payments would come in, and do it again next year. And I would say we were a low-cost producer. That's changing.
Big time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, with the technology and hybrids and corn, with the yield advantages that they can take advantage of, with all the genetics that are coming in, there really is, like I said, not a corner of the state that you can't find yield, which yield turns into profit. And that's really what we focus on at Peterson, is the yield side of the equation. You can certainly find cheaper options than what we have, but we really believe in getting the right product in the right field. That's why we do focus so much on the agronomy side. But, you know, back to your point about, you know, the North Dakota acres that are out there, our three largest crops are what you said, corn, soybeans, and wheat. But a lot of people forget we're number one in the production of a lot of different crops. They just don't make it in volume. Edibles, lentils, dry beans. I think there's about 10 crops that we're actually number one in.
Flax, maybe.
Flax is one of them.
Which is a very beautiful crop. If you see a canola field next to a flax field.
Right. So while we're far down the list on, I think we might be number 9 right now in soybean production for North Dakota. Corn, we're, I think, 11th. But those are obviously the highest by volume. But as a percentage, we've got about 10 other crops that are number one in the country
and
as far as production.
Acre, Cass County plants the most acres of soybeans of any county in America, but I think you can fit like 3 Iowa counties inside a Cass,
yes,
correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So I think Iowa has 90 some counties. We have like 57. And, but we plant a lot of, people always ask me what's like up here. And I said, well, it depends where you're driving in the state. If you're in the Red River Valley, we didn't mention sugar beets.
No, that's obviously a huge crop in the Red River Valley.
About a half million acres.
That's right. With American Crystal, right in the region here, that's been a big crop for decades in our area. So we certainly compete against it as well.
Competition. Let's talk about that. Competition. Shutting off my watch so we'll have no more distractions. If you didn't make it for the live filming of this, you're not getting in. Competition. It's seed. I have several friends in seed business. Of course, I split my time here in Fargo in Indiana. Mm-hmm. And, my friends in the seed business say it's tough. It's a relationship.
Yeah.
The product has to yield.
Yep.
You can only be so much friends with someone and have a bad yield and think they're still going to buy from you next year.
That's right.
Especially at these prices.
That's right.
It's not supposed to blow down.
Yeah. You know, I think corn, for a lot of farmers, and I certainly could be wrong, but I think is a more emotional purchase. A lot of guys want to be corn farmers. Soybeans the last 3, 4 years, 5 years has really been commoditized by the market. We've got a lot of companies out there that are going for the low cost advantage, which I guess I understand from a strategy. It's really the opposite of what we go for.
You have something about germ. Talk about germ.
Yeah, so the industry standard for soybean germination is 90%. Since the start of Peterson back in 1995, we really got into soybeans heavy in 98, 99, with Roundup coming on the scene, or I should say Roundup 2s. Carl always wanted to be better, and I say that intentionally. So we hold our standard at 94% germ.
94.
Which, you know, we strive for that. It's not a guarantee. But when you think about all the things that you have to do as a seed producer and a processor and a cleaner to get to that 94, everything starts from the minute we start talking with our production growers. We put them into contracts. We try to find the best growers around our region, and we have a lot of good growers in the Red River Valley and outside of it. So we've got to do certain standards there. And then once we receive the seed in from our growers, it's a whole different process to make sure the handling of that seed, because that's where you get the difference in the 4% is the handling of that seed. So whether it runs through our conveyors, our belts, and then through the filters into the processing bins that we have, that is the major difference between us and a lot of other companies. But to do that, we've got to produce a lot more than we typically think we're going to sell. That was an eye-opener for me when I joined the company, right? As the general manager, obviously, the bottom line is important. But the thing I loved about Carl and why our philosophies match so well is he's more interested in doing it right. And the bottom line is a much further down the road afterthought. We want to treat our customers and our employees the right way. And we think doing 94% germ is the best thing to do for the farmer. So yeah, that's something that we live by.
Silly question, but most of that bean seed that you sell is also grown here, correct?
That's right. So our corn's
different.
Yeah, our corn is grown under irrigation in Wisconsin, right? It's not as sensitive to the climate changes that we have up here. Soybeans much more prone to differences within the region as far as weather, soil types. So yeah, corn grown in Wisconsin under irrigation. And then we have about 85 to 100 production growers across our region that range from South Dakota all the way up to the Canadian border and over into Minnesota. Because the more locally we can test those soybean varieties, the more confident we feel that they're going to work in the farmer's field.
Got it.
Yeah.
I had to bring the catalogs, not to brag or boast.
Sure.
But a lot of people listening to this podcast are probably from the Midwest. They could be anywhere but here.
Yep.
North Dakota is very much a flyover state. And there's a lot of people, when they do a survey of America, what states haven't you been to? North Dakota pops up a lot.
That's right.
And
my wife, actually, not to interrupt you, used to work for the...
We could go back and forth all day. The View. We'll just start arguing with each other.
Oh, my God. I don't think I can handle that. I mean, I could like to argue, but I don't want to be next to the View.
When you get done with your wife, we have to mention someone else's wife you work with.
Yes. Who's
very influential.
Yes, absolutely.
Or you're going to get a wooden spoon.
No, and I don't ever forget about her. I mean, I work as closely with her as I do with Carl. So
go back to your wife.
Anyway, yeah. So North Dakota is absolutely a flyover state. In fact, my wife used to work for the Convention and Visitors Bureau of Fargo-Moorhead, and they have an award and a plaque that when somebody comes in as kind of the last state of the 50 they visited, a lot of times that's North Dakota. They get a signature on a certificate, a t-shirt, and a photo with the president of the CVB. So
I remember. Yeah. I was in South Dakota, and Barack Obama flew in maybe weeks before his presidency ended,
because sure,
it was the only state he hadn't been to.
Right.
So you're thinking our 3 electoral votes aren't real influential?
I don't think they're worried about us as much as we'd like to think they are. Yeah,
we have some powerhouse senators here, congresspeople.
Yeah. Senator Hovind, he's from Minot.
Yeah, why not?
We both played golf at Bishop Ryan High School in Minot.
That's kind of where all the great golfers start.
You know, he might have gone a little further than I did, but I'm younger than he is, too.
No, he's a powerhouse, and we're going to have this new farm bill coming along.
That's right.
And he's going to be very influential in that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the other wife.
Yeah, Julie Peterson. Julie's fantastic, right? Carl often says there's no way he's gotten the success that he's had without Julie. And you know, certainly every husband, I think, would say that if they got a microphone in front of their face. But
cameras, three of them.
Yeah. And I joke with Carl, when he first offered me the job, If Julie hadn't been in that room and really seeing that she's the execution person with that company, I don't think I probably would have signed on with Peterson. I mean, Carl's brilliant. He's a fun dude to work for.
A little different personality, though. If you don't know him, he's a hard read. That's all I
could
say.
He could be. He's about as gentle and nice of a guy as you'd ever meet. But yeah, he's I always called him kind of like, you know, I'm an 80s kid that Back to the Future. He's kind of the crazy, wild-haired scientist guy. He's got great ideas. But if not for Julie, a lot of those ideas would have died on the vine in his office. And Julie's, you know, her philosophy, she came from Great Plains.
Iowa, right?
Well, Iowa. Yep. She grew up on a ranch or farm in Iowa. Came up here with Carl. But Julie's got quite the resume. I mean, she worked with then or now Governor Doug Burgum at his company, Great Plains. Mm-hmm. She was one
software,
of the first
right?
10 or 15 companies. Yeah. Yeah.
So when I tell people I live in Fargo and there's 2,500 employees from Microsoft, they're like, what the heck's Microsoft doing in Fargo?
At least I think it's the second largest campus in the world for Microsoft.
Is that
Fargo.
Right?
It is.
Yeah.
It is. So, yeah. So Julie's background is really great.
Microsoft bought Great Plains.
Right. Yeah. There's
right.
the connection. Yep. That's right. And, you know, that was about the time, a little after that, that Carl and Julie decided to start the seed company. So one of the other pillars that Julie's always said is we really want to market ourselves to appear bigger than we are. And I get a lot of, you guys are huge. No, we're not huge. We'd like to be bigger, but that's Julie and the marketing efforts and the relationships with NDSU. Julie's been fantastic with this company and it's been a joy to work with her and Carl. And quite honestly, I got married a couple years ago, so I'm new to the whole marriage game.
How's that working out?
You know, she hasn't left me yet. She
good.
Hasn't left
Very
me
good.
Yet. She's a wonderful woman, but she, Julie and Carl, watching them, I don't know how they, I mean, I love my wife. I'm not working next to her every day of my life and then going home and talking about work. And they do that pretty fantastically. So
hence
it's
why I live in Fargo and Gina lives in Valpo. Best marriage ever.
You She's might have it figured
me.
Out.
She's going to kill me. I fly home every weekend.
Well, there
love you,
go.
Babe. Love you.
As my wife says, it's good to miss you.
It's good to miss you. Well, I tell you what, I'm having fun. This is going better than I thought
good.
Because, we've only done a few of these, and we're getting it going. We got a couple new things here today. We got the flag in the background. I have a special gift for you. This is an American flag. That's a gift for you.
Awesome. Thank you.
On every episode, I offer out flags for farmers.
Love
and
it.
And if a farmer emails us at flags, I almost misspelled it yesterday, FLAGS at agbull.com within a few weeks of the release of this podcast. So if you catch the podcast, you say, hey, watch this podcast. Send us an email. I will send you this very American flag right here for you. And we love what you're doing, the American farmer. The other thing I got to do, we got to take a commercial break because we have a sponsor.
Love it.
Colorado Jack's. We may have another sponsor here if you do well enough at this.
Okay.
And I twist your arm. Colorado Jack's Popcorn out of Leeds, North Dakota. Great family-owned business. I call my little buddy up there the Popcorn King. And he's supposed to send little bags of popcorn, and we're supposed to give those away too. But we're not quite there yet. We should have had popcorn here and the whole deal. So
we love Colorado Jack's, by the way. We've
you
got
do like
baskets
it?
Of their stuff at our office. In fact,
and I did not pay you to say that.
No, you did not. In fact, I
it's
saw
really
that
good.
When I came in. It is. We had a group in from DC today, and they were all enjoying some Cowboy Jack sea salt.
Yeah. Yes, really I like the jalapeno caramel mix. Now I asked Brian and his wife. Will you sponsor the podcast? And he said, sure. How many views? How many listeners do you have? I said, I've never done an episode. This was a year ago.
You got to start somewhere.
He goes, so you're asking me to sponsor something that exists. I go, you got to believe in me, brother. But we're here. And wait till he gets the bill. But he said, I'll do it. Because that's what North Dakota is. You could start a podcast, ask for sponsorship, be broadcasting out of a bank in Mayville, North Dakota. Thank you for driving up.
Yes, sir.
We're located right in between Fargo and Grand Forks. In a basement of First State Bank, another sponsor, and the people in the community have been so supportive. I've asked three people for sponsorship. I had three yeses, and I think I have some people who'll be interested too.
Awesome.
I've asked farmers to donate flags. These flags here today were donated by BK Seeds. Now, I don't want to start any trouble.
No,
I don't know if they
fantastic.
Sell your seed.
Good.
But they're supportive. And Brian Kenner up there, good dude. And I've asked banks, hey, will you buy 50 flags? Now, these are very nice flags.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. Case of flags shows up at home.
Oh, yeah.
Great support from the people. And we're just warming up. Now, this whole podcasting thing's been around for a while.
It has.
But the Ag Video Podcast, what I noticed, talk a little bit about why we're doing this, is when I came up here and Don Wick was here the other day recording, when you meet with the radio guys, they give you, and you do that, you go to the farm shows, you put the earphones on, you speak for how long?
A minute or two, it depends on the topic. Sometimes longer, 10, 15 minutes.
We have unlimited time.
Okay.
So we could talk about whatever you want. And I think, and I know, other people in ag have time. They're in combines, tractors, trucks, dropping off grain. They don't want commercials. They don't want this station, that station, left, right, middle politics. Just they love ag.
Yeah.
Right. Farmers love talking about farming.
There's a reason podcasts have taken off, right? People just enjoy the conversation, the free flow, not the rigidity of a question and answer session. So, yeah, I mean, I listen to podcasts all the time. In fact, the radio is hardly on anything but a podcast when I'm driving. So,
do you have a ag podcast? I do have to tell you something. You can't be slamming stuff down on the table.
Am I making noise?
Well, a little bit. They'll pick it up. He's laughing. He's like,
you're going to kick me out of here, aren't you?
They're like, there was a mouse in there. I was with someone the other day, and they were going like this. Like, all right, how do I tell them not to hit it? I'm like, just tell them to stop.
Yeah.
Tell me what a great ag pod. You're going for a long ride. You're driving from Fargo to Sioux Falls. You got 3 hours on your hands. What are you going to listen to?
You know, you're probably not going to like that I'm going to say this. I don't listen to a lot of ag. I try. So
it's open mic night here. Just tell me what interests you.
I'm a big true crime guy. I love all that kind of stuff. So I listen to a lot of true crime.
Okay, I got something for you.
Well, so you may have heard about this. This is kind of a current events thing. So that first Serial podcast that was about Adnan Syed. He was a guy who was charged and convicted of murdering his girlfriend back in 1999.
Okay.
First podcast comes out by Sarah Koenig in like 2014.
I have no clue what you're talking about, but I love it.
It's awesome. Well, my wife and I have listened to the podcast. We've watched the documentary on HBO.
It's exciting to be listening to murder podcasts with your wife.
You know, it's a little scary how much she likes it. I'm pretty sure I could be offed at any moment.
You're like, honey, did you realize if you just sprinkle lime that like you'll be gone?
Yeah. She knows how. She's smarter than I am. Which I don't think is that difficult to do. But anyway, so just in the news yesterday, because of the podcast in 2014, they dug back into the facts of the case. They just released him from prison yesterday.
Wow.
So these things are, I mean, these things can have a real impact.
I got one for you. I can't believe we're talking about this. We're totally off the rails. Producer's laughing. That's okay. I was at Sports Clips in Valparaiso, Indiana, because if you got to do like this, you got to go. You got to get a haircut once in a while. The gal I started a podcast. She goes, I like this podcast. There's this two gals in Indiana who have these podcasts about unsolved murders.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about?
I don't remember the name. I know what you're talking about.
They're based out of, I can't remember it right now. But they're based out of Indianapolis. Okay. So she's cutting my hair.
Mm-hmm.
And I go to look like, I go to Apple iTunes and see how many likes you have and stuff like that. And I go, whoa. Well, this thing has like, you know, tens of thousands of likes on the Apple app.
Mm-hmm.
I go, what is this? And she goes, it's kind of like to your story. There's a gal who would go do research based on police reports. She's not making anything up or speculating. And they're all these gruesome murders. And mm-hmm. I have to look up what it is. And in the footnotes, I'll be able to, when we drop this podcast, I'll be able to put what this murder thing was. And so I said to the gal, cut my hair, and people listen to this. And she goes, oh, yeah, these murder podcasts are like way popular.
Huge.
Tell me.
I don't know what it is. For me, I always had an interest in it. I mean, I'm kind of an old young guy.
Are like unsolved mysteries?
Mysteries that used to give me nightmares when I was a kid. But I think that was the start. I loved it. I always watch Dateline on Friday nights, mm-hmm. Maybe watch it on Saturday if I record.
There's always
it.
A creeper on that show doing
always
something wrong.
Right. So I've always loved it. I think it truly is. I think people like to be their own detectives and they like unsolved crimes. They like to kind of figure things out. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. But there's a lot of them out there. Up and Vanished is another good one you should listen to. Payne Lindsay. He's awesome. Yeah.
And so if you're going on a long drive, that's what you're listening to.
You know, yeah. I mean, I do like Joe Rogan. Mm-hmm. I know we're trying to make you the Joe Rogan of North Dakota, which I kind of like. That's fun.
We're going to be bigger because we do this in Valparaiso. I have the same studio in Indiana. But I have to tell you that I think the interest of what we're doing up here, I think there's plenty of good podcasters covering the Midwest.
Yep.
And there's not many up here. I mean, I know there's people who work with different news stations who will release a podcast. I listen to Red River Farm Network religiously. Don Wick was here yesterday. And, But the true podcast, some of the universities, I was on a flight to Fargo and there was a gal from NDSU and they had a little podcast. I listened to it. It was all right.
Yeah.
I can't think of what I listened to. Oh, our friend who, Jason Hansen, he has agronomy happy.
Rock and roll agronomy. Yeah, Jason's great.
Jason and his crew have a really successful podcast and they're educating people.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, I think, the second or third podcast I ever did. We talked about agronomy on ice, which you guys are always there.
Yeah, always there.
I had your omelets that you make in the bag and put in the boiling water. Yeah. Good job.
That's a Midwestern thing.
Yeah, well, we're learning. People are like, so this guy came to talk about seed. You skipped to murder podcast.
Well, hey.
Agronomy. But that's what this is about.
But to, I'll go bring it back to egg for you. So these podcasts, right? We deal all the time and think about how's the next generation of farmer going to get their information, right? From the days of our fathers, it was twice a day. It was the morning newspaper and then it was the nightly news. So now it's in the palm of your hand. I mean, every time you pick up an iPhone, you can go out to any social media site. You can find information instantaneously. So I wouldn't necessarily call this next generation smarter yet. They got to figure out what to do with that information, but they are consuming
it. They sure have a lot of choices.
Oh, they're consuming it in so many different ways. And I think podcasts is a great way to put out the right type of education, especially when it comes to agriculture. You know, I've sat on a plane many times and heard people talk about, well, farming's killing, you know, the climate.
The bees.
Right. And it, and
we can go over all of them.
And you could argue one way or the other. I know where I stand on it. But I think what we need to do in agriculture and food production is really start to tell the truth and the real story behind a lot of these things. Because our farmers are doing great things for the betterment of this planet. And we're just not talking about it enough. Because quite honestly, I'll just speak for the Midwesterners and specifically North Dakota. We're not really a braggy kind of look at what I'm doing kind of a people. We're just kind of head down, nose to the grindstone and get it done.
But I understand that because I had a someone who I thought would be happy to come on the podcast and excited. And they said no. And I said to a friend, why wouldn't he come on? And they go, well, in this community, they would look at that as like braggy and showy. And
yeah. That's what I love about North Dakotans, man. We're I appreciate the humility. It's not about what it does for you. You just go to work every day. You work hard. You make a good living for your family. And if you're not about putting it on any kind of media outlet. So, yeah.
Well, until I came up here.
But I like this. This is good.
Well, this is good for the community. This is good for...
it's good for ag. We need more voices out there. And you'll start developing...
You know what the motto is of the Ag Bull podcast?
No.
I want to be a champion for ag.
I like it.
So when we were making the logo, doing this, doing that, they said, what's your motto? And I looked at Gina. I'm like, she goes, what do you think? I go, a champion for ag? It just slipped out of my mouth. I don't know if I borrowed it from someone or
sometimes the best ideas are by accident.
It's a pretty neutral thing.
Yeah.
But what I did like was I was starting to listen to some ag podcast and I'd said to a friend of mine, he said, what do you think you're going to do with this podcast? And I said, well, people like Orion are retiring. And he just stops and he goes, you think you're next Orion? I go, no. I think it would take 50 people like me to replace them.
Sure.
And that man worked incredibly hard for 50 years or maybe even longer, actually, I think 60 years. Mm-hmm. And I look at the next generation. I just don't see him coming in, telling the story.
Right.
Long format. And we have time.
Mm-hmm.
We turn on the cameras. We turn on the mics. We pay really talented people to help us. We have teammates who are helping us do this. And I noticed that the quality of some things are down. So you talk about Peterson Seed being high quality.
Yep.
When I first started watching YouTube's about podcasts, they said, if you want to lose listeners, have poor sound quality. It's a podcast about sound. Mm-hmm. That's where when you sat down, I'm like, we got to get close to the mics. We got to test this. We got to test that. Told you I screwed up yesterday. I had my mic too loud. The other guy too soft. And we're having to adjust everything.
Sure.
And I'm still learning. And you just got to start. And so one of the best advices someone gave me, I said, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. They go, stop it. Just sit down and start recording stuff.
Yeah.
You're going to look back in a year and be like, that was horrible. And
you don't learn a bike by watching it.
No.
You just get on it and pedal.
No. What do I have in my notes here? No, sir. I have, I want to talk to you a little bit more. We'll have Carl and Julianne hopefully together or individually, or just Julie would be fine too. And extend that invitation.
Yeah.
They got in the seed business by accident. Do you want to talk about that or do you want them to talk about that?
Well, I mean, they can certainly expand on it. I can kind of give the 50,000
foot view. Would you do that?
View,
I think people, I know most people listening to this podcast aren't from here.
Sure. Yeah. No, Carl grew up on a farm. He's a third generation farmer.
What town are you guys located?
Prosper, North Dakota.
About 14 miles north, west of Fargo.
Yeah. Yep. More probably west than north. We're about 6 miles north of Interstate 94, outside of Fargo. So, Carl, was actually, growing wheat. And because of some scab issues back in the 90s, they started cleaning wheat for themselves, bought a machine and started cleaning, wheat for all their neighbors. And, they asked themselves, well, geez, we're doing all this work for our neighbors. Why don't we sell some seed? So if you know anything about Carl, he doesn't do anything halfway. So he kind of
can't get kind of pregnant there, boss.
No. And, if you farmed in the 80s, wasn't a super prosperous time with interest rates that I think most 20-year-olds wouldn't understand today.
I heard those went up today.
They did. They did.
Yeah, real interest rates. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Markets don't love it right now.
But back to seed.
Yeah. So started in 95, really got into soybeans in the late 90s. Carl kind of figured out that I better get a Roundup Ready license if I really want to compete because Roundup was coming.
Can you explain to me? I don't farm.
Sure. Sure. Explain Roundup.
I know. I use it to kill all types of stuff in my yard. Yeah, sometimes I kill my own grass. I've sprayed 2,4-D and killed my wife's flowers. I'm good at killing stuff.
But, and that's what it did.
So
right?
What was a soybean like before Roundup? Traditional?
Very traditional, conventional. I'm not sure what they did. Yeah, conventional would be the word. That's where you don't use a lot of herbicides, or at least there's herbicide resistant soybeans, and that's where you get the traits that come in. We've got Extend Flex, Extend, Enlist E3. We had Liberty Link, although I believe Liberty Link no longer has a license now. I think we're not allowed to sell it or grow it, at least not on our farm, and most, I think that's the way it is. But yeah, so as weeds become resistant to these herbicides, new traits, new different formulations have to become, and that's where Roundup went to Roundup 2. Roundup 2 became Extend, and now Extend is going to Extend Flex. And
what does that mean, the Extend Flex?
That's adding another formulation that will allow Liberty to be sprayed as a chemical or herbicide on your. So it's, in other words, it's resistant now to both of those types of dicamba, and Liberty can be used on the Extend Flex platform.
I'm going to say a word and then you say back what it means to you. Dual modes of action.
Now we're getting into the agronomy part where that's not my expertise. But
that's when we have Jason Hansen.
Yeah, I mean, dual mode of action is basically, from what I understand, you might have to cut this out, but
weeds are bad. Let's just leave it there.
Weeds are bad.
There we go. We won't have to cut anything out.
And dicamba has been great for a long time, but now we're finding potentially some issues with dicamba. So they're trying to move quickly into...
And things change.
Yeah. HT4, HT5, those are coming in the next 4 to 5 years.
I have no clue what any of that stuff is, but I know 95% of people listening to this do.
Yeah.
I had you bring in your books. Let's talk about... Sure. I did a marketing meeting, a commodity brokerage, to a nice group of farmers in central Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And they... I asked them what they thought, if I lived in Fargo, what they seed we grow. And they said, I asked them what they were. I knew what they were. They were 105 to 108, and they plenty of time to get it in, plenty of time to get it out. Mm-hmm. You go to the coffee shop, they'll tell you how hard farming is there, but they should come spend a season with us. And nonetheless, they were off by 10 days, right?
Yeah. I mean, what we go is, like I
Let's
said,
talk about a range of seeds you can sell.
Yeah. I mean, the earliest corn that we have on our list right now is a 74-day. And that's getting up towards Canada. And then we go as late as... Wait, is that Canada or is that A?
A.
Yeah, you betcha A.
You betcha.
And then you got to ask everything like a question at the end.
There you go.
Yeah. So 74 days early, we go 104 down into South Dakota. That's about as late as we go right now on the corn side. Soybeans, we've got a 007. And that's up in the... anything really above Highway 2 in North Dakota, getting towards the Canadian border. And then we go all the way down to a 2.3 and a 2.4 down in South Dakota for soybean
maturities. 007?
Correct.
Now, is there a number lower than 00? Like, can they go... What's the lowest you can go?
That's a great question. I don't know. I've seen a 006 that we've tested, we've trialed. I'm sure there's lower. You get it up into Canada, you're probably talking some lower numbers. That's just the lowest we go. We have a 007 on our list this year. We're on our product page, and that's...
What's the highest you go?
Beans would be 2.3, 2.4, and those would be in mid-South Dakota. And again, if you think of a bell curve, yeah, we don't have a ton of business in that range. I would say the lion's share, if you look at that bell curve, is probably in the 0.3 to 1.1 is probably our sweet spot. But we've got everything ranging from the early day stuff down to the late day, too.
And those numbers, those low numbers have to be people from the Midwest are like, whoa.
Exactly.
And they still grow something. And if they knew, not to brag, I don't think we'll have it this year, but those numbers can grow 50 bushel beans. That is possible.
It is possible. Yeah.
I've seen it. I've been in combines. And not every year, not even necessarily often. It's Mother Nature is in charge. The timing of getting it planted.
Right.
Did we get the timely rains, the August rains? Did we get adequate heat? Did the crop, sometimes it likes, it gets a little stressed, and then it gets that rain, and it's bonanza after that.
And, you know, I got to give a lot of credit to the farmers up north. I mean, they really deal with swinging acres just simply because of the weather patterns. This past year, a lot of the spring planting was about a month late because of all the moisture that we had. And you saw a lot of farmers switching from maybe those mid-maturity levels down to the early ones because they knew they didn't have the time in the growing season. So we're really focusing hard on those early maturities because if I'm a farmer up north, I've got to constantly do a cost benefit of the cost of those hybrids and those varieties versus what I'm going to get a yield out of my field. When you ask a farmer probably up north, they'd be tickled pink to get 180 bushels an acre on their corn. They're not seeing that, right? Like a farmer in the Red River Valley or south of here, obviously much south in the I states, but they're constantly asking the question of how much am I paying for that bag versus what am I getting on the yield side? So we are really working with a lot of our partners and genetics partners to find those lower maturities that can really yield because then they found something that'll really produce for their operation.
We're not going to be able to stop the adverse weather here. Technology can adapt to it, but we can't make Mother Nature, we went from a drought to a flood to a this to a that.
If I figured that out, I probably wouldn't be sitting here. I'd be calling in from my island, I suppose.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
And so many choices. Now, that's your seed that you offer. Mm-hmm. And this, would you call it like your regional company?
We're definitely a regional company. Okay. We operate in the three states, but more than regional, the word that I would cap, you know, all caps, underline is independent. We've been fiercely independent for 27 years. We, as Carl always says, we are friends with everyone. We are beholden to no one. And the reason is, and it's pretty simple, we really don't answer to anyone but our farmers. We want them to have the best opportunity to grow yield. And I get asked all the time, you guys are a seed company, right? And I say, no, we are an agronomy solutions company. Seed happens to be one of the vehicles we use to get good products into those fields to raise the performance. But really what I'm interested in is driving the performance of those fields, whether that's through chemical. We're looking at a lot of biologicals. We have our own seed treatment now, both for beans and for wheat. And those are all things that can help the farmer, whether it be defensively or maybe it's more of a yield producing product. We're very interested in finding the things that make a farmer more productive, not cut their cost necessarily. Now we're trying to be as cost mindful as we can be, but we hired a guy by the name of Rick Swenson a couple years ago. Rick's a great guy, well known.
His newsletter, right? They can sign
up
for his
monthly newsletter, GDU units. He's, you know, I kind of give him crap once in a while. He's almost more of a meteorologist. He really digs into weather. But Rick is a boots in the ground, back to basics kind of agronomist. And when we hired him, I really wanted to focus on agronomy and doing the things for farmers locally, because a guy in Cass County is not doing the same thing as up in Burley County or Ward County in Northwest North Dakota. And those differences in locations, it matters. They don't all do the same thing.
Like population?
Population, whether it's planter depth, planter speed. There's a lot of different things that farmers are either really good at or maybe not. They've kind of forgotten the basics. I mean, it's just like any other thing, right? You can kind of forget about the fundamentals. So you mentioned field day at the beginning of the podcast. That's where we're really starting to showcase.
Show, like, hey, you didn't want to buy this planter because you thought it was this, but we planted this area with this planter at this depth, with this, on this date.
Yep.
And this is what happened.
And we're going to be coming out with a publication at the end of January. I just went over sort of the mock-ups today, actually. We want to get that in the hands of our growers and our dealers, because I'd be remiss if I didn't mention our dealers. We've got over 100 dealers in the three states who are absolutely critical as partners to our seed business. They're the ones with the relationships to the growers. So we want to get back to agronomy. We want to get back to showing and teaching farmers anything we're learning, because we pour some resources into learning all of these different effects, whether they be defensive or yield producing. So that's fun to work for a company like that. It is much more science-based than just finding a bag of seed that you can get from somebody and marketing it to the customer. That's really not what we're about.
Carl and Julie are farmers.
Yeah, like I said, Carl's been a farmer for 40 years, third generation. He is a farmer at heart. In fact, if anybody picks up our product guide, there's a quote in the back that we've got everywhere in our office.
You could say it.
Yeah, it's we will sell no seed we wouldn't be happy to plant on our own farm. I mean, that's something that Carl...
It's legit.
I probably hear that once a week. I mean, it gets a little annoying after a while, but he means it. Carl lives that, and that's kind of our North Star. We do that every day.
So we're talking about bushels. I always tell people I'm in the bushel business. What do you think about drain tile? Of course, I'm friends with the drain tile people.
Sure.
Anyone ever get drain tile and say that was a bad idea?
I haven't heard any. That doesn't mean it's not true. I mean, again, everything comes down to cost benefit, but I think you've seen, especially in the last 24 months, a lot of people putting drain tile in. I think that's really
kind of
important.
Paid for itself.
That's right. Especially with some of these heavy soils, it doesn't drain well. So yeah, I think drain tiling is an excellent tool for the farmer.
And I heard complaints in years past that they didn't have the money, but with the price of the crops doubling, Ukraine out, land prices have exploded. Mm-hmm. I know everyone wants to keep it a secret what land prices are, but land up here traded $2,000 higher the other day than it had ever traded before. Yeah. So if it costs $1,000 an acre to tile, I know where you can get the money. I'm sitting at the bank. You are.
Right.
It also, we're in the basement. Go upstairs. Tell me you want to borrow against your land and put tile in.
That's right.
If you love yourself, you probably don't want to do it. If you love your grandkids, it could be the greatest inheritance you could ever give them.
That's right. That's right. And
I should be selling tile. Why am I doing commodity
brokers? I don't know. I was wondering, are they a sponsor? Do you have any companies in mind?
We're working on it. We have some friends who are in the tile business. And we also, I was on a podcast called The Water Table.
Okay.
And great podcast. And I don't farm, but I do listen to several of The Water Table's podcast. And we talked about, as a commodity broker, what do you want people to do? I said, I want them to grow bushels. I want to be able to help them market big bushels, big business, great dollars. Mm-hmm. I want to help the farmer extract every penny out of that bushel.
Absolutely.
You want to help them grow a bushel.
You do.
After they grow a bushel, I can't market PP.
Right.
If they grow a bushel, I have something to do. Mm-hmm. I can help a farmer in North Dakota market a bushel so much better if they have tile. Because their confidence level that they'll get it in early, it'll do better throughout the year, and they'll get it out sooner than their neighbor, which gives you better opportunities with basis, and we can go on and on.
Well, and you really see that now with the commodity prices where they are.
I've heard those went up.
Well, a year ago they weren't, you know, they were really tough. But now, and I get asked that question a lot. I mean, don't you want prices to be low because aren't you paying for that through the seed? Which is true, but we don't really look at that from a cost standpoint. I look at it more from a, if the commodity prices are higher, farmers are happier and they want to plant more products and they're more focused on yield than they are cost. And so I really root for commodity prices to be north because I think it helps the farmer.
And when you have these farmers grow this soybean seed and you're looking for 94 germ and you have them grow extra seed, what you don't sell, you then sell it back to the market, right?
Yeah, we turn it around and get that to the elevator. Local elevator. Yep, that's
you
right.
You grow way more seed than people would realize to sell what you sell.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we have to, right?
Not like that so much in corn, Scott?
No. Okay. Corn is, and like I said, our breeders do that in Wisconsin. But soybeans, you know, it's really, you've got to grow 30, 40% more if you really want to get to that center cut, if you will. That really high germ, 94. And we get a lot that's over 94. Unfortunately, the last year, I think across the region, everybody was having a hard time finding germinations at a higher rate.
I think that's all across the United States. I have a friend who's a prominent seed dealer in the Midwest. He said, I think this crop's going to be smaller. He was saying this in June. He said, even before that, he said, a lot of the country starting off with not bad germ, but not as high. If there was the best soybean seed you could ever make, he said, we all didn't get to plant that. There was problems with last year's soybean crop.
Yeah. And I don't.
It's funny hearing it from you because this guy's 700 miles south.
And I think that what we've surmised is the main reason we think is we had a heat up in August of about 8 days that really
last
cooked.
Year?
Yeah. I believe that cooked a lot of the beans. Yeah. And I think that was across the Midwest. So. Mm-hmm. Doesn't surprise me that was a larger problem than just here in North Dakota, South Dakota. But, you know, you look at this year and how much difference a 1 year can make, right? We had a 1 month delay in planting. Everything got in late, but we've had a phenomenal growing year. There's been good moisture, great sunshine, good temperatures. And so if you talk to Rick Swenson, he'll tell you, we have caught up to the GDUs. A lot of our fields are looking great right now. The beans have gotten a chance to get some moisture. They're drying down nicely. Corn's looking good. So can't speak for everybody because, you know, field by field, it's always very different, but we're pretty happy with this year. Looking good.
Where do seed guys go to geek out? I was once at Chicago at Gibson's having a steak and a drink, and the annual seed convention was there. What's the annual meeting where all the seed dealers...
ASTA.
Yeah, talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, ASTA is the American Seed Trade Association.
That one out.
Well, you know, that's... You're always full of surprises.
A lot of stuff in me.
You know, for a lot of years, ASTA has always been the place to go in December. Everybody goes to Chicago.
American Seed.
Yep, the American Seed Trade Association.
Yeah, it's always in Chicago?
Has been. Yeah. I don't know. It's been there for a long time. I mean, 2-3 decades. I don't know the history of it beyond that. But yeah, it's a great chance for all of the big companies, the Bayers, formerly Monsanto, BASF, Corteva, which was a part of DowDuPont was a merger.
We know all them.
Yeah, you never know who, you know, doesn't like what names. But yeah, great opportunity for little independent seed companies to go talk with the big companies. A lot of meetings take place at that one. And then I'm going to put a plug in for the independent companies. I'm on the board of the Independent Professional Seed Association.
Ooh, I like that.
Todd Martin's our CEO there. And that happens in January.
Tell him about the show. You do that for me?
What's that?
Tell him about the show. Maybe he'll come down and talk one day.
Todd Martin would be a great get. Todd is fantastic. And, you know, with the Independent Professional Seed Associations, one of the things we're battling right now is some of the bigger companies and, you know, how they're treating the independent companies and their licensees. I mean, that's a battle as old as time. I came from the defense industry, and bigger companies were always pushing around the little companies and able to do, you know, things to those companies as customers and suppliers. And it happens, in this industry, but having, you know, independently, Peterson Farm Seed, right? We don't have a huge voice around the country, right? People are going to wonder who we are if we get outside the 300-mile radius. But what the independent, or IPSA, as we call it, does is combines all of those independent seed companies and creates one voice.
Okay.
And that's huge
like
for our industry. Absolutely.
It's like a political action committee.
Absolutely.
Right.
Okay. And Todd does a phenomenal job advocating for independent companies. Sitting on the board, I'm learning so much from other leaders of these independent seed companies. And it really is a phenomenal industry. And it does allow the smaller companies to have a voice, to talk to some of the larger companies, and to really fight for small companies in places like Fargo or Prosper, North Dakota, that most people wouldn't know of any other way.
Interesting. Very interesting. I was worried when we sat down. I told you, listen, I only wrote 5 things down. We're going to kind of wing this. Markets were crazy busy. And you go, I'm good. We'll just
do it. I'm a fan of a lot of things. We talk about a lot of different things.
I didn't know about those murder mysteries. It's not even in my wheelhouse. Like, I have a very specific thing.
Well, what do you listen to?
Well, because I'm doing this, I listen to a lot of stuff on agriculture, although I don't farm. So the real nitty, I bought this planter, I have this, I do tillage with it. They lose me.
Sure.
What do I listen to? I like listening. I like stories. I like when people have done well, failed, come back. I like when people are building things. Mm-hmm. And maybe like one in every 20 Joe Rogan episodes I listen to, I scan through. Started listening last night to Aaron Rodgers. And he had some opinions. And who else do I listen to? Strangely enough, I listen to that podcast, The Water Table, just because I really believe in what's happening up here is that we're in a massive wet cycle, and I believe in it. It'll help all of us do business better. Mm-hmm. I listened to Chip Flory's podcast. It's called AgriTalk.
Okay.
And there's AgriTalk AM and AgriTalk PM. And it's just a perfect amount. If you go work out or go for a walk, it's 45 minutes long. And one thing that really caught my attention is that we're going about an hour here.
Okay.
But he does 2 shows every day that are 45, 48 minutes long.
That's a
every
lot of talking.
Every single day. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, this guy's organized. He's this, he's that. And I've always listened to it and I'm on it. But then as I try to do this and produce like 1 show a week, yep, I'm like, holy cow, you need help. You got to ask for help. You got to be more organized. And so I like stuff about markets. I love listening to stories about traders, but not traders who are trying to sell you, hey, for $29.95, you could do this. There's some stories of people from the 80s, 90s. I listened to a podcast the other day about the founder of a friend of mine said, you got to listen to this podcast. It's the guy who has been buying all these exchanges, and he started the ICE exchange, the Intercontinental Exchange, and I'd never even heard the man's name. I listened to a podcast. It was so good. I listened to it immediately right after. And one thing I can drag out of that is he said, whatever information and data you're consuming now, you'll be consuming twice as much of that in 3 years.
I believe that.
And it just keeps growing and growing. And so it's really focused on technology. And I've spent an incredible amount of time watching YouTubes on I realized I'm not an editor. I realized I'm not a producer.
YouTube is great, isn't it?
Yeah,
there's it's nothing a you can't spooky. Do without
no.
it.
No. Yeah. Yeah. You can get your news segments at night without all the commercials and garbage and stuff. And
do you still have cable or did you cut the cord?
I have Sling.
Okay.
Yeah. At home in Valparaiso, Indiana, I have DirecTV. Mm-hmm. And at my apartment, I do have cable. I've never even plugged it in because I have Sling.
Yeah.
And I tend to put on a little something on Sling, or I actually just go on my TV and hit the YouTube button and start watching different videos. I'm not a big sports guy.
Okay.
I'm not into this whole, let's watch these two guys beat each other up fighting.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just kind of, you have to understand trading. I trade personally and I help in commodity brokerage. I get so much data thrown at me at the end of the day that, at some point I like to shut it off, shut my phone off, shut this up, just go dark. On the weekends, this is going to come out funny. I'm a little quieter than you'd think on the weekends. On the weekends, I don't say much. It's just myself, Gina, the kids are older now, the dogs like me. And I really enjoy my family a tremendous amount, my mom and dad. And I love like what you did today when someone introduces me to new content that I'm
– Sure.
Or when I was getting my hair cut and the gal's like, I love murder podcast. And it's two ladies in Indianapolis, Indiana that have one of the hottest podcasts in the world.
They do.
I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
Well, that, and you know, you ask the question, why do people like podcasts, right? I think people are just interested in human conversation, right? These things aren't walled in by, I'm going to ask you these five questions and you're going to answer these five questions. It's, let's just have a conversation and we'll record it and we'll see if it's interesting.
Yeah, that's a good place to start wrapping things up. And I'm not sure why I like agriculture, but I respect the American farmer, the world farmer. If you're eating three meals a day, someone produced that. Agriculture is not going away.
No.
And I feel like, as you had noted a half hour ago, that it's people need education. One of the things you guys did at Peterson, you had that farm table thing.
Yeah.
That was great. And we need to do more of that. We need to get the young people realizing. I heard a story yesterday from a friend. This is, I don't want to mention names, but he had a young man from the inner city come down. And he was talking to him at his office, and he said, you guys don't know a lot about agriculture, really. And of course they don't. Like, how would you if you live in the concrete jungle? Nothing but cement. He said, you ever been to a farm? Well, I've been to a zoo or this or that, or I went to a market and bought strawberries. You ever drive a tractor? No. Stops what he's doing, loads up the pickup. It's here in North Dakota. And he put this young man in a tractor and said, I'm going to teach you how to drive it. I'm going to get out. And this thing's
$300,000.
Yeah. And you think it's a big deal to have a Ferrari? Well, we got about 10 of them around this farm,
no
right?
No kidding.
And he let him drive. He said from doing that, he took a million pictures. He posted a million things on social media and inadvertently had like one of the biggest positive press releases that you could ever have. And
that's
I said,
awesome.
We need to do more of that. He actually grows seed for you guys. And
I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. And,
but that's such a good, that's what we need is people teaching and educating about what agriculture is all about. I saw a news story about 3 weeks ago. There's a young guy down in Wahpeton, Breckenridge area, which is about an hour south of here.
Mm-hmm.
Who
good dirt.
Didn't
good dirt
yeah, good dirt, but he didn't grow up with a farm, didn't grow up with farmland. I'm similar. I didn't grow up on a farm. I didn't grow up with farmland. And that's sort of a limiting factor. If you want to be a farmer, you have to have a land. And he's doing everything he can to promote the fact that he wants to be a farmer. He started buying little pieces of equipment when he was 12, 13 years old. He's 18 now. And I think he's going to end up partnering with a farmer that maybe doesn't have a son or a daughter that they can hand the farm to.
Or marry the daughter. Look at that plat book and then strut around circles.
Right. But I think that farming does have some attraction to the younger generation. It's not just sitting in a tractor and staring off into a field. There's so much technology and so many things that are changing with our industry that it's kind of exciting. And agriculture, like you said, it's not going away.
Not at all. Yeah. No, it's a fascinating subject that I still have friends and family who they know I do something with corn. What's Tommy do? I think he does something with corn. They don't know corn trading, corn commodity brokerage. They don't corn, something to do with corn. And it's good stuff. Well, Scott, I can't thank you enough. I could talk to you for another hour. We really could. This went This went as well as anything I've ever done. I'm smiling because I'm happy, and I think the listeners will be happy too.
But well, I appreciate you having me on. As I said, I'm fairly new by a lot of standards to the industry, so it's fun to talk about it. And from meeting you 6-7 years ago for the first time, to see the investment that you've made into North Dakota specifically and our industry and agriculture, it's really phenomenal what you're doing. And if more people don't know, they really need to be checking you out, because what you're doing is great for our industry, and we need more people like you. So I appreciate what you're doing for us.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Enjoy the flag. I'm glad we have a crop. It was a crazy spring. I always tell people I end podcasts with, I'm Tommy Grisafi, and I'm bullish agriculture.
I like it. I like it. Thanks, Tommy.
Thank you.